Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Capital Irish. We're here once again on a Sunday afternoon on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. My name is Marion Grealis and I'll be with you for the next half hour or so here on Capital Irish. We have a very special guest today in the studio. Returning to us once again is Ambassador Peter Ryan. Fáilte.
Cor Margaret, it's lovely to be here, Marion. Thanks a million.
Well, thank you for coming back. We asked you back to just hear a little bit about the year that's been and what's coming up in 2022. So let's look back first at 2021. What has the year been like for you and for the rest of the crew at the embassy?
Yeah, we've had a pretty good year. We're delighted to get it through intact in one piece. And we know that many people in the community, this has been a tough year for them. Away from family and friends, and lots of things happening here and happening back in Ireland affecting family, and it's a new world, I suppose, that we're missing out on so many of those opportunities to get together and to mark those. And I just want to pass on our thanks to the community leaders, everybody who stepped up to support our community, and to pass on, I suppose, our condolences to those who lost loved ones back at home, and our regrets that we weren't able to get together as much as we might have liked as a community this year. But on the other hand, we have been very fortunate here in so many ways, and we're appreciative of that, and we're appreciative of the fact that we have been able, with a few brief interludes, to behave more or less as much of the world hasn't been able to do so. So look, for us, there's a whole range of highlights. I suppose our being able to have our first speaker's lunch in Parliament on St Patrick's Day was a real highlight for us as a community, and to have 20% of all of the MPs and members of Parliament at that is really pretty extraordinary. And already I know that the invitations have gone out already for next year on that, and it's really extraordinary the number of people with connections, Irish connections here. But also, I think, which is more important than that in lots of ways, are people who've got an affinity of some type with Ireland, whether it's our music, our literature, our art, our language indeed, or with Irish people generally, they just look, they seek out opportunities to connect with Ireland. And we're delighted to be able to do what we can to build on all the great work that's gone on here for so long.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah. You're right, though, as you say, an unusual year and very differing circumstances across the globe. Are there any particular, I guess, successes that you're really proud of? You mentioned, obviously, the speakers at Parliament. Is there any other highlights that you would sort of tell everybody about?
Yeah, there's lots of them. I mean, we introduced the Culture Club initiative here in the city, as you know, for children aged 6 to 11. And we had two sessions of our Culture Club going. This year we'll be having another multiple sessions next year, and we've extended it around the country. So we started in Wellington and we've just completed it in Christchurch also, and we'll be introducing it in Auckland and in a range of other locations around New Zealand. And that's a voluntary effort to bring children together, to give them a bit of exposure to, Irish culture, whether that's Irish music, Irish dance, Gaelic sports, but also to Irish legends. And to a bit of crack too, and to watch the kids get together and connect with children who they might not have known yet, is wonderful. And we have these wonderful cases of kids coming in, named Tig and Saoirse and so on, who say it's great to be somewhere where people know how to pronounce my name. So that's lovely, and that's very special for us. And really, I suppose, as part of the, I think that's been a little bit of a missing piece perhaps in our community here, that we have these wonderful community groups who are doing great work, but perhaps there's an opportunity to try and bring it all together in one place. So that's been really, really well received. We've had wonderful support from that. And of course, one of the features of it has been that we've opened it to everybody, that it's not restricted to people of Irish heritage at all. There's no pre-qualification as such, just as there's no pre-qualification, for engagement in the multicultural world here, that is modern New Zealand. So we had lots of children there who had no connection with Ireland, including Maori children who didn't have a single connection with Ireland, other than the parents' interest.
Their interest,
In Irish legends, mm-hmm. and the Irish language and so on. And just last week, just at the weekend, I was in Christchurch, and we rolled out a weekend camp of the Culture Club. And it's extraordinary, you know, after an hour in the session to hear the kids introduce themselves. It's Mrs. Charlotte, Cottasanam Ditsa, and so on. And that's important. So from little seeds like that, hopefully we can extend that around the country.
Yeah, and that's extraordinary. I love how you're open to all of those other cultures and peoples. And that, as you say, the interest in Ireland and Irishness is the common feature of all the people there. That's really cool. I guess you've mentioned expanding that. Is that on the cards for next year?
Yeah, very much so. Mm. And we've also been delighted to be part of the foundation or the reintroduction to New Zealand of Conor na Gaeilge for the first time in more than 100 years. Mm. And extraordinary that in the very early 1900s, there was a very strong Irish language movement in New Zealand, which included a lot of leading Maori at the time. Mm. And we had Conor na Gaeilge branches, or Crave as they're called, in Balcouta and in other places on the South Island.
Yeah.
Kind of extraordinary. And you know, we've missed a trick, if you like, by not bringing the Irish language interests together perhaps before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, absolutely delighted to have lots of great people led by Dermot O'Coffey down in Christchurch, and people like Loretta Egan, who was here visiting and so on. But look, lots of people have got behind it.
Yeah.
You know, Sinead and Pat and Breen and Eilish, and God knows how many people around the country have been doing all this stuff for ages.
Yes.
But the idea is to try to bring it together, to have that strength when we're together. And there's Zoom classes every evening now. But I suppose the most popular ones are on Wednesday with Dermot Coffey. And I think that's one of the good things that's come out of COVID, actually, people's readiness to get online and, not be bashful about it. And a lot of the same things that that are true of the Tereo language here and the effort to revitalise are also true of our language, that there is absolutely no right or wrong when you're learning, and Bahan Changi Ilaur, to like the life of the language is to speak it. And you know, we need to have our Irish organisations here and community here. We really need to we really need to leverage that rich and deep heritage that we have of, you know, a spectacularly rich language, you know, spoken daily for more than 3,000 years.
Mm.
And yet, you know, you'd be hard pressed often to find it in our community, but it's there.
Yeah.
And when it's awoken, you know, it's a wonderful thing for everybody.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you have to live your life through it.
No.
But it means that you can learn to read a poem or learn to introduce yourself or whatever it might be. And we will be really ramping up pretty dramatically now our efforts on that. We'll be looking to probably to put people in around the country to promote that. And the connection with the Maori language is just extraordinary. And those so many generations of Maori have looked to Ireland, have visited Ireland, are in contact with writers and artists and musicians in Ireland who work through the Irish language. Many people in the Irish community in New Zealand perhaps are not aware of those links, but we are. And our job, I suppose, is to try to encourage more of those little seeds, and to help water them along the way as well.
Yeah, there are so many parallels between like the Irish language and the Tereo language here, and how people want to, there's the appetite for it, but sometimes maybe not the resource. And I think that's a really important point that you've made now, just about this program, but also about the children's activities and program as well, is that as an embassy, you can bring that glue and bring that resource to connect all those different people that are already doing some of those things. And that's just an extraordinary power, as you say, to help it flourish.
It's a great privilege to be able to do it, to be honest with you. And as you know, we get very excited, and because, you know, there isn't a day that goes by that we don't find another connection, perhaps that we need to be sharing with people today. And if you look, for example, at the fact of, you know, a lot of the language policy in New Zealand is based upon the Irish language policy. A lot of the effort to reintroduce the Kura, so the Tereo language education for young children, is based directly on our experience in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great in that. But we need to be able to speak our language. We need to have when we look at the Irish community organisations in New Zealand, Maybe it's time that we had a little bit more Gaeilge in there, for example, in their logos.
Yeah.
You'd be hard-pressed to find an organisation in the entire country with an Irish language version of its logo or its name. But yet when they were established more than 100 years ago, in many cases they had it.
Yeah.
And similarly, you know, there's been a really nice effort, including by some of the groups here in Wellington, to reintroduce Tereo, for example, onto their websites and so on, to give that sort of empathy and honouring and recognition.
Yeah, acknowledgement.
That's so important for us.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, Irish people are great. You know, they answer in the census every 4 years, you know, when they're asked, can you speak Irish? They all say, yes, absolutely we can. And it doesn't mean they use it every day, but it means they recognise its relevance and its importance. Mm. And we're absolutely delighted to see the interest that's here. And I suppose we need to keep thinking of new ways and getting a new generation of people involved, rather than always going back to the stalwarts who have built things like the Access Radio and all the other all the other resources that we have.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, for younger children, language comes more naturally. It is an easier skill to pick up the younger you go.
Yeah, they don't have any of the issues that we have going on. They don't make excuses like saying, "Oh, my teacher was terrible," or whatever. And I always joke. I always joke when someone says that to me. Well, I always say, "Well, you know, the teacher told me to stay away from nightclubs and all that as well." You know, I ignored all that. So, I wasn't going to let a teacher put me off my own language.
That's right, yeah.
It's in our DNA. It's in there somewhere with all of us.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, so for me, 2022 will be very much about that. It'll be about the year of Gaeilge in New Zealand.
Yeah, Archangagugus.
Sinead.
Very good. Well, thank you, Peter. And now let's have a think about, I guess, 2022. What is coming up on your radar? Obviously, you've shared a lot about how revival of the Irish language in New Zealand is definitely on your radar. What else are you looking forward to in 2022?
We have a really exciting project that we have completed in 2021. The next phase of it, if you like, is going to be in 2022, which is the first translation into Te Reo Māori of one of our classic pieces of literature in Ireland. And the piece that we chose was Brian Friel's translations. And I have a copy here. I'm handing it over now.
Oh, thank you.
Let the record show. And
Friel's
translations is set in the 1830s. It's set in a fictional town in Donegal, like all of his, like Dancing at Luna, so and so
on. Yes,
set in Ballybeg or Owen Beg. Yeah, I think Ballybeg's the name of it. Set in Donegal, but this particular play is set pre-Treaty of Waitangi.
Mm.
And it's about the arrival of... First of all, the arrival of primary schools, so the hedge school system is about to go. But more importantly, I suppose, in terms of historical resonance for New Zealand, it's about the arrival of the British to draw the first map of the area and to change the place names. So it's quite an extraordinary piece of literature in Irish history. And Friel wrote it at a really, you know, tricky time in Irish history that thankfully is something in our rear view mirror. Mm. He wrote it during the conflict in Northern Ireland. When he was asked, he was working with Seamus Heaney, Stephen Ray and so on, and he was asked to write something that would explain what was happening on the island of Ireland.
Mm.
And he wrote that. Mm. And it was performed for the first time in Derry in 1980, which, as you know, was a really, really tricky time and what way things would go in Ireland. And it's an extraordinary piece of work. It's very short, very easy to read. It's funny. There's a bit of love story in there.
Oh.
It's a wonderful, it's political with a small p, but it's intensely political. But it's also, it's a wonderful primer for understanding Ireland. And in fact, understanding any colonising, any situation where colonisation occurred. And we've been working with a young Māori academic by the name of Hemi Kelly, whose grandfather's from Lookgarman in Wexford.
Uh-huh.
And Hemi is the guy who translated Lord's songs into Te Reo Māori.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been working with Hemi for the last year or so, and we're going to publish this in Te Reo Māori.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
And our dream is that this will then be set in modern New Zealand.
Right.
And it will explain to people why the place names issue is so sensitive and the trickiness with it. But, you know, it's really nice. There's lots of lovely parts, and it's not any way... kind of, it's not a finger pointing exercise or anything like that. It's a really kind of learning thing. It's kind of a piece of work. And literally, you'll read it in a on a long bus ride, or a long boat ride, hopefully over the Christmas or New Year. It's just wonderful, and it reaches into an ancient, a time in Ireland. Remember when we would have only had hedge schools, when most of us couldn't access education. The majority of people on the island couldn't access education, but yet we had a huge grow for education, a huge mass for it. We had big love and we had huge respect for it. And we couldn't access it. And into that maelstrom, if you like, came, you know, a maelstrom of dispossession and, you know, our land being taken and the Irish people going to the four corners of the world. Into that came people to change the names of our places as well. Yep. And I think that's a very, it's a really, really interesting correlation between Ireland and New Zealand. So we're very excited about that. That's going to be, a bit of a showstopper in the middle of the year. And then we've a couple of really other really interesting pieces we're doing. We're doing a really interesting piece of work around, as you know, we mapped our community last year, and we launched that in Parliament as well. But what we're doing at the moment is we're mapping and identifying opportunities for education sector collaboration between Ireland and New Zealand.
Oh, nice.
For the very first time. So that we've been doing that for a number of months, and we'll have that piece of work probably around St. Patrick's Day, funnily enough.
Odd that, isn't it?
Funnily enough. And then the other big thing, I suppose, in the first half of the year is that we will mark the 100th anniversary of the publication of Ulysses. And that'll have a very special aspect to it because James Joyce's sister lived in New Zealand.
Oh, right. I don't think I knew that.
And corresponded with him in New Zealand.
Oh, I see.
Which explains why he went to see the All Blacks in Paris in 1909, why he included a haka in Finnegan's Wake. Why there's a whole array of really, really interesting connections between his sister. So he had one sister who went to, Sister Gertrude, who moved to New Zealand. And the family legend was that he said to her, if your faith is so strong, go as far away from Ireland as you can. So she came to New Zealand and never saw him again.
Oh, wow.
They never saw each other. He was in Paris. She was in Christchurch. And they were corresponding with each other. So suddenly you see him go to watch the All Blacks when they arrive in Paris. Suddenly you see him writing to her, asking her, can you tell me the name of that dance they did at the start of the game? Can you get me the words for the chant? She, of course, is a Moonshore, Kyol, so she's a music teacher. So she reaches out to her pupils. Of course, she doesn't ask the other nuns, she asks the pupils, how do I get this? And we have, we still have sisters alive today who remember her.
Oh, wow.
In New Zealand. And we have many of her past pupils in Christchurch. Speak very fondly of her, and she passed on that love of music and literature. It's quite extraordinary.
That is extraordinary.
And this is the only place on the planet where her sister lived. And it's the 100th anniversary, which is the biggest event in the, the Irish literature world. And we're going to mark that in a really serious way and give everybody a chance to be a part of that. Whether they read the book or not, that's fine. But at least there are some wonderful aspects to it because, of course, it reinvented the English language, essentially, which is really interesting when we're talking about the Irish language. Because so much of Joyce's approach and everything else came from that, oral tradition.
Dream of consciousness that,
Fascinating, isn't it?
Interesting, Gosh, I'm just sitting here quite surprised because this was all new stuff for me. So every day, Gahlog Lona Skella,
Sinead.
Karamaga. Just going back to the Brian Friel translations work, is your vision that there will be a performance of that? Because it is a play, right?
It'll be performed. There will be a number of cities that are going to host performances around the country. But actually, in a way, I think in a way, one of the things we'll be doing is we'll be bringing basically like a traveling show around the country. But what we're really interested in is the discussion around it. So we'll be bringing that to Moray around the country, for example, for the first time. And we'll be, but, you know, we'll be bringing it in a pretty unique kind of format. You know, it's not going to be a conventional theatre performance. I think there will be theatre companies doing that because they've got wind of this and this is a really big project. And the Maori world is very excited and we're very excited. So it was something that I really took my time about when I came here. I was trying to find the right, you know, should it be Ulysses that we translate first? Should it be, you know, should it be Seamus Heaney? You know, should it be Claire Keegan? You know, who should it be? What should we do first? And, you know, we're really delighted. I'm working with Professor Marco Sonzoni, one of the greatest Heaney and Friel scholars on the planet, who is based here in Wellington, lived in Ireland for 20 years, you know, has four different degrees from four different Irish universities. Mm-hmm. We are so blessed here. We have all of this magic and resources here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what we've been trying to do is trying to unearth it and to find channels for it. To make that more accessible for others, rather than making it less accessible, actually to make it more accessible.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are so lucky. Ireland is so lucky that it has so many people with a deep love and, you know, real, real interest in our, in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something perhaps that others are so lucky at, because they have the issue of access. How on earth do I access this culture? Mm. Because I've got to learn another language and so on. I've got to figure out the society, how it works. But in our case, we can go to any library in the country and we can see shelf after shelf after shelf of books that are, you know, either written by Irish people or written about Ireland.
Mm.
And that's a great starting point for us.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That it's not like a complete unknown. There's already knowledge out there and interest out there, as you say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fascinating stuff. Well, it sounds like you've got a busy year ahead.
Yeah.
Are there any other things that you're looking forward to that you want to share with the listeners, or are there a few surprises coming that you can't tell us yet?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a few surprises. My big ambition for 2022 is to have an official opening of the new embassy. So we've been working away in there, and we managed to welcome a few great friends in, and you know, we look forward to welcoming very many more. And if anybody hasn't been in the embassy yet, just feel free anytime, drop me a line or get in touch with us via our website or however you do such things, and come in and see us, and you know, we'll put a cup of tea on for you. You'll be very welcome to come in, and but we still haven't had an official opening by an Irish government minister, and we certainly would like to have one of them. That'll be you know, that's kind of normal to have that.
Yep.
And we are in a pretty unique position, I should say, in that Foreign Minister Nanaia Mahuta, her family are from Waterford. So she's very keen to join our minister to officially open it. Of course, for me, you know, the number one thing is to have our minister there, the Irish government minister there. And Farron Foley, my colleague, and myself are really looking forward to hopefully welcoming a minister out next year, as I know some of the listeners will be looking forward to welcoming their family members out or maybe getting back to Ireland and hoping for a return to some kind of normality, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I was actually just thinking on my way here, like for your team and your staff, like, I guess in the past, people who worked with your team, like, you know, you could go home every year or so. And that's obviously changed here and across the Department of Foreign Affairs. Yeah. Is that something that you and your colleagues talk about regularly? Or
try not to talk about it too much, actually. But I think Farron managed to get home to Donegal for Christmas, which is wonderful.
Oh, good on her.
And absolutely delighted for her. And she hopefully will survive the weather there. But I think Wellington might have prepared her somehow.
Well,
for
I'm telling
it.
You. Don't have you looked think? Outside, Peter?
Yeah. So we're keen to get home. My dad marked his 99th birthday in October. So, you know, obviously people miss that, you know, we miss that and so on.
Mm.
But look, at the end of the day, we are very fortunate, recognise we're fortunate to be where we are.
Yes.
We're with our little nuclear family here, and we've got so many great friends in the community. People have been very kind to us, and that's kind of what keeps us going. And to be honest with you, if the job wasn't so enjoyable, yes, you know, you would be worrying about these things and so on, but I don't really have a quiet moment. And you know, we're trying to keep in touch with people who we know already, but we're trying to reach out all the time to new people. So I really would, if I had an ask for the year ahead, my ask would be to do things our way, the old ways. Irish people don't go on their own to a party. They don't go to anything on their own. You always bring somebody with you, and you bring something with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a New Zealand tradition as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to see more of us bring someone with us, you know, rather than, you know, turning up on our own to an Irish event or whatever it might be, but to reach out to somebody, and particularly with Christmas and New Year and everything coming along, reach out to somebody and just to say hello and just say, look, you know, when in the New Year, the ambassador said, I'm to invite you in to an event in the office, in the embassy, you know, it's official Irish territory. whether we've had an official opening or not, it's Ireland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really, really, there's nothing that gives me more satisfaction than welcoming somebody in mm-hmm. who has got a connection with Ireland. And it's extraordinary for us, you know. And I'll just tell you one little story if you have time. And I was down in Christchurch on at the weekend, and I met up with Tá Tipperary O'Regan, you know, one of the most famous Maori leaders in the country, and he was talking about the hospitality that was in his home growing up. And his father was Roland O'Regan, and his grandfather is PJ O'Regan, a member of Parliament. So it was his great grandfather who'd come from Ireland. Mm. And he attributed so much of the style of living mm. to this Irish Maori connection, that you came into the home, you were instantly welcomed, you were hospitable. We have the same thing mm-hmm. about the records about, you know, people even visiting during the Great Hunger in Ireland mm. and people offering them the food they had in yeah. the bowl while they were starving. And that's about the empathy with others, keeping an eye out for other people mm. and making them feel welcome. That's what our community does, and that's what we're going to be going at that 24/7 next year. You know, there's no strangers here, just friends who haven't met. And, you know, we can't invite people in if people don't alert us to them. Mm-hmm. If people don't say to them, oh, my friend Maureen or whoever it might be, yeah. or Marion or whatever, or my friend Johnny hasn't been in, we'd love to welcome them in. So that's the request I would have for the year ahead. I guess awfully in Tivasha. Dave Galair.
Gur Mahagut. And well, listeners, we all have our orders now direct from the ambassador. Thank you so much for joining us, Peter. We'll go out on a piece of music that I know that you have requested in the past, not here on Capital Irish, but on another format. We'll finish up with a Christmas song, which is an Irish Christmas song, Once in Royal David City. Thanks again for joining us, Peter.
Gur Míle Mahagut.
Happy Christmas to all our listeners.
Nolly Conadich.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That programme was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.